Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello and welcome in a Friday edition of the program live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. A reminder right at the top of the show, don't forget you can catch us live at 11 a.m. here on the Big X and, of course, streaming online at BigXSportsRadio.com. And if you can't catch us live, you'll have to find us as a podcast. We're on Apple Podcast. We're also on SoundCloud as well. And we appreciate you being with us no matter how you join the program each day. We always start with kind of a local coronavirus update in these ever-changing times, not only how the virus is affecting us locally and in Indiana, but of course how it continues to greatly affect sports and live sports as well. Indiana at 9,542 cases as of the last update. I do not believe that the state's dashboard website was updated last night at 11:59 as it typically is. So I believe an update now coming a little bit later today. I fully expect that Indiana jumps over with a couple days of data to add in 10,000 cases or more when the next update is made. So it continues to have a big hold in Indiana. Of course, yesterday, President Trump and other top officials on this matter talking about the reopening of America. A group has been put together to restart the economy, and the governors in each state will have the ability to reopen their state in different phases that have been outlined by the federal government as the governors and their, obviously, staffs within each state see fit. So going to be interesting to see who's the first state to reopen. And from a sports perspective, here's kind of what I'm thinking. The first states to reopen, depending on what we're talking about, what type of city it is, what type of amenities in that city, could be very interesting to watch. Like Arizona, how soon do they reopen? And the reason I say that from a sports perspective is some of the states that have very little infection right now and that have had very little problem overall with this virus would be great potential hosting situations for professional sports, because if they are to re-begin or to start again, they're not going to happen with the travel schedule around the country, with home games, away games, even without fans. I think we've all come to the reality that for the foreseeable future, there will not be fans at sporting events. But they're going to have to sequester people together. Same hotels, multiple hotels, a hotel that's dedicated only to players and coaches of said league that's getting restarted. Las Vegas makes a lot of sense. The Strip is closed. There's hotels that could house thousands and thousands of people in the same facility. They wouldn't need to take up that many facilities to host a lot of teams in one area. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what governors are saying now. I don't expect Indiana to reopen right away or to change a whole bunch right away, Kentucky either. But maybe out west, maybe in some different areas, could some of these states and big cities that can reopen in a reasonable manner, the new normal, I think is how we have said this, maybe they will be ideal candidates to host an NBA playoffs of some sort or to host some sort of sporting event that would be made for TV. It's what President Trump said yesterday, kind of like in the old days. So interesting stuff. We'll see what happens. It does look like, if you follow the numbers and the models, there is some progress being made, but still a scary time. You got to stay home. I know there's some good news, it seems, out there. There's talk of restarting the economy, but still a little early to get out as far as in your regular routine or just go out for the purpose of going out. So next couple weeks important, and I said this yesterday. I knew that I think the announcement had been made that President Trump was going to talk about reopening states and the process that that would look like yesterday after our show into the evening. I said yesterday I expected in a couple weeks, this is just a gut feeling kind of following all this very closely, that we'll hear some sort of announcement from a major league or two about their plans to restart action or to play games without fans. So I think getting some states back open, seeing which ones are clear to do so, who some of the early birds are, will maybe help speed this process up as far as getting at least an announcement that one is coming back. There could be a month lag time between an announcement and the start of games because of training and because of operational stuff that would have to be put in place. So interesting time, and we'll continue to follow it over the weekend. And I think as the next couple of weeks go on, we'll know more about the return of sports, at least at the professional level. I think there's still a lot of moving parts with colleges and academic side of colleges that has to mirror up with the athletics and obviously high school stuff as well. But I think pro sports, there may be some movement, and we might know a lot more in the next couple weeks about what some of that movement could be. Let's jump into the show lineup for today. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we've got our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We'll take a look at a big storyline right now in basketball. Is the G League, that's the NBA's minor league, it used to be called the the National Basketball Developmental League, the NBADL or NBDL, I think. The D League is kind of the moniker it initially had. Then Gatorade came in as the major sponsor. Now it's called the G League. They are competing, in a sense, with the NCAA for the top basketball players for a, I don't want to call it a year of eligibility at the G League side, but they're trying to get those top guys to go on and enter the G League. And we're going to talk about that. They're actually creating a special team form in the G League. Very interesting on how this could work and compete with college basketball. There's different sides of this. Some think that this will really knock college basketball without some of the great players. Others say this is what's been happening. Outside of a few like Zion Williamson, some of the better players each year have went to Australia to play or have went ahead to the G League. Not all the time, but could it become more common, I guess, is my question with this new G League program, and we'll tell you about that in the headlines. We'll take a look at a couple other NCAA notes in the story as well, in the headlines as well. And then Silver Creek Athletics, they've had some hit here in the last couple days, some deaths to big key figures in their athletic program, either currently or historically as well. So we'll talk some about that coming up a little bit later in the headline segment today. Also, that's the show lineup. We'll have Jared Morris of the Assembly Call with us as always on Fridays. He'll talk some IU. I'm going to talk to him about this G League program as well that's trying to attract and recruit some of the top players in the country to this program. I'm going to talk with him about that when he joins us a little bit later today as well. And then we'll wrap things up today with our regular segment, Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star. Lots to talk about with Kyle from a basketball perspective and beyond. We'll do that. And we have our senior spotlight today where we recognize a senior that unfortunately has had their entire spring sports season sliced away because of this pandemic that we currently find ourselves in. And so we each day have been trying to recognize a different senior from an area school that's had a great career, whether it's sports altogether, whether it's academically, whether it's both sports and academics. And today we'll recognize Spencer Freiberger. She's a Floyd Central student, track and field athlete, and we'll talk all about her a little bit later in the program and the great career that she's had at Floyd Central. The show lineup is a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Visit your local Honey Baked Ham store in New Albany for lunch and dinner options that you can get quickly in a clean and pleasant atmosphere without the crowds and the chaos at the grocery stores. Honey Baked Ham has several dinner bundles as well as their delicious ham and turkey for takeout. Don't forget you can interact with the show. Love to hear from you. You can submit a comment or a question. It might get read on the air. First, you can follow me on Twitter at Hoosier Hills. That's the easiest way to communicate with me during the show at Hoosier Hills, all one word, Hoosier Hills on Twitter. Tweet me your comment, your question. Also, the show has a Facebook page. Search the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison in Facebook, and you can like the page, get updates on the show, get links to podcasts, get an understanding who each day is going to join us as guest on the show, and you can leave us a message there as well. Let's jump into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany, and a few headlines that I've picked today. One is this G League situation, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in the program. Basically, top player in the country right now, Jalen Green, was going to announce or did announce his decision yesterday. He had a couple colleges on his list, and it also was rumored that he could go the professional route. Obviously, as the rules stand right now, he can't go directly from high school to the NBA as it stands now again, but he could go to Australia. One of the Ball brothers did that recently. A few others have done that as well. He could go to the G League. A couple players have tried that route. And the G League has kind of quietly said that they are going to work on and put together a program, a pathway program for high school athletes that want to come straight to the NBA but can't. Well, the G League, they want to book as their and push as their key alternative to college basketball. So Green's commitment yesterday wasn't to a college. It was that he's going to go to the G League. And after his decision was announced, there were lots of opinions and columns and stories out there about how this could hurt college basketball, others saying it won't hurt college basketball. That's a debate for this program and probably days to come. But one thing we know for sure, that Green is going to enter this what's being called professional pathway program from college, or from high school to the G League to NBA, where he'll earn about $500,000 wages in 1 year. Now, that's not going to be standard. Not every player that comes out will get $500,000. Some, it looks like, might get $250,000. And I believe that the salary for players could greatly vary based on their talent and their projections for the future. Also, there's a lot of incentives that come with the program. It was reported by Green that if he did not do well with this, that the G League would pay for him to go to college. Now, his eligibility would be expired to play college basketball, but they would pay for him to get a four-year education at any college if he so chose. And I'm assuming that is true even if he stays in the G League and ultimately goes to the NBA, that that's a perk of his contract as well. He gets one-on-one coaching, professional skills training, and what they're going to do, they're creating a new team in the G League. You know, a lot of the teams are located nearby the NBA affiliate that they have an agreement with. In fact, a lot of NBA owners now own their own G League team, so they can send players back and forth and have a true farm system. But the G League is creating a team. It's going to be based in Southern California, and it's going to be a mix of some players like Green, the top high school kids that want to come out. I think there also is another player that's not in the top 10, but just outside the top 10 rankings. His name is Isaiah Todd. He recently was committed to Michigan, then decommitted to Michigan, and is going to go to the G League as well. He'll play on this same team with Green, and they're going to mix some of these young, talented players that have NBA hopeful futures with veteran-type G League players that are going to be there to, yeah, play on the team, but also help these younger guys develop and mature as well. And this G League team, they're not going to be, from what I understand, not going to be in the standings. They're not going to compete for a G League championship. They're going to play a limited number of games. I think most of their games are going to be on the road. The G League has a showcase where they bring some of their teams together and play in front of a large number of NBA scouts and personnel. Obviously, they're going to play in that as well. But this, to me, is a very bold plan by the G League to recruit high school seniors that are upper echelon, Romeo Langford-type talents and better to the G League and compete against college basketball, against John Calipari in Kentucky that are living off of one and done and many one and done players in many scenarios. So this will be interesting. There have been a number of players this week now that this story came out that said, yeah, I got a call from the G League commissioner, who's a former NBA player as well, and was proposed this option also, but I chose to go to my college. So clearly, this isn't just for players to dream up and try to say, I'm going to go to the G League, I'm going to go to the NBA. they're recruiting players to this program, which is very interesting as well. One other headline around the NCAA, Adam Zagoria reports that according to a source, the NCAA will institute a one-time adjustment of academic eligibility standards for incoming college freshmen due to this current pandemic. One of those adjustments is there is no SAT or ACT score required because those tests are currently not available, and athletes that haven't taken it yet or try to take it and better their score later into the spring and sometime even the summer will not have the opportunity to do so. The source went on to tell Zagoria that this will speed up a lot of the kids that reclassify. Now, I don't know Christian Lander down at Evansville. I don't know his situation well enough to know if he is still working on ACT, SAT, or if he already has that in the bank. But that is another thing that could aid someone like him that is trying to reclassify and get to college as a freshman next season, basically this summer, a lot quicker than what the current path would be. One final headline, Silver Creek Athletics. They've lost some key figures. Charlie Pop passed away earlier this week. Charlie, a long time, I think you could call him assistant, someone very involved with the girls' basketball program through a number of coaches at Silver Creek, in the athletic program as well. But he passed away after a long battle with an illness. That obviously brought out a lot of thank yous and well wishes to him and his family from members of Silver Creek Athletics, from the athletic director all the way down to the girls' basketball players, many of them stepping forward, talking about how much they will miss Charlie Pop. He was 82 and someone that just really had been around Silver Creek Athletics for as long as I can remember and for as long as I have been around. Also this morning, I got an email that John East has passed away due to some complications. Young guy, he died in the emergency room at Clark Memorial. He was a 1991 graduate of Silver Creek High School, only student athlete at Silver Creek High School to have such great accomplishments in running in cross country. First team All-State. I think he was a cross-country state champion. There's a big photo of him at Silver Creek as well. We're going to have more on John East, but he did pass away yesterday, and he's almost a legendary running figure in the area and at Silver Creek High School as well. And I understand his personal story. I'm still getting more on it, but he overcame a lot early on in life to become the runner and the successful runner that he was in high school athletics. So our thoughts and condolences and prayers to not only the family of Charlie Pop and the Silver Creek girls basketball team, but also to John East as well, a legendary athlete at Silver Creek High School. That's a look at our headlines for this Friday edition of the program. We'll head to a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jared Morris of the Assembly Call on IU basketball, this new G League program for the top high school players, and a lot more after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Friday program. Jared Morris of the Assembly Call is with me. And when Jared joins on Fridays, we talk IU basketball and more. And I want to start with the topic. I'm curious your opinion. I spent a lot of time in our headline segment on it today. But top high school players essentially are now being recruited by the NBA's minor league, the G League, to play on a special team in a pathway to being a professional program is kind of how it's been phrased. Is this a bad thing for college basketball, and has the NBA, in a sense, become a competitor of the NCAA for some of this top talent leaving high school each year?
No, I don't really think it's a bad thing for college basketball. I mean, look, I would like to see the most talented players play college basketball, but I also want guys playing college basketball who want to be in college, and I think guys should have many options that they can choose from. So I think it's, you know, I think it's perfectly fine to have there as an option. I certainly think that it is something that the top you know, the top guys will consider, and so college basketball will lose some of those guys. But overall, I don't think it's going to have a major impact because, you know, the reason why college basketball fans cheer for college basketball is a lot more than just seeing, you know, the top five recruits in any given class. We all know that. And so, yeah, you know, I think it, if you don't have a guy like Zion who is, you know, who just kind of transcends college basketball and becomes a, you know, a huge figure in sports, and if Imani Bates, you know, the top guy currently in high school, if he doesn't go to college, you might miss out on some of that casual fan interest that you get, you know, during the regular season when ESPN just over promotes those guys to death, but it gets other people to tune in. But the tournament is going to be the tournament. You know, the support for Big Ten basketball is going to be the same. So, and I don't see it having that big of an impact on college basketball. And I certainly think that the uncertainty around college sports right now is going to lead to more guys considering it and consider, you know, and smartly considering it, because there's a lot less, it's going to be a lot easier for the professional leagues to get started again than it will be for the college leagues. So I think in the moment, you know, that makes this a more appealing option. But I really wonder long term if this is what these guys are really going to want to do, because it sounds good. I mean, like, Jalen Green is getting paid $500,000. He's a professional. You know, he's going to be able to say that he's in the G League, all that stuff. But when you look at the details, like, it's not a real G League team. It's like a select team that they're going to, you know, they're going to have coaches and support staff and all that stuff, but they're going to be playing exhibition games. And, you know, I wonder, as they see their peers in college playing in these big games and becoming bigger stars and being more well-known, because people are still going to care more about college basketball than this G League thing, are they really going to be happy with that? You know, it's easy to make the decision now, but as you're kind of going through the season and you're just playing in these, you know, relatively meaningless exhibition games that no fans actually care about, is what these guys get from playing basketball, is that actually going to be satiated? I don't know, you know, and you know, so I guess we'll see. But when you actually dig into the details of what this G League thing is, like, it's not just playing on a G League team and you might get called up to the pros. It's this developmental league. And I don't know, that just doesn't seem as appealing of an actual basketball option to me as playing in college on a big stage like all of these players would be.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, especially here in the heartland of basketball like Indiana, hoping that this doesn't affect the college landscape, the Big Ten, Indiana, other schools locally. But you have to wonder what the future of some of this stuff will be as players more and more want to get paid. I know there have been some players go to Australia. One of the Ball brothers most recently went over there. In fact, I think he bought the team or bought a share of the team that he played for as he gets ready to come back and enter likely the NBA this coming draft. Another topic away from Indiana, and we'll get into a couple IU notes here before we go, but is sports and not being played right now, and the coronavirus, and a lot of talk about reopening America, reopening the economies, a state-by-state approach. That's all that's on TV after the announcement from President Trump and other officials yesterday that's at some point going to happen here pretty soon for some of the states. Others, of course, that's still a bit of a pipe dream with the issues they're dealing with around the virus. But I can't help to think about sports from a college perspective as well. And I think it seems clear that professional sports are likely going to be played at some point with everyone sequestered to a couple regions or one city, with players and coaches all kept there. Obviously, with classes and academics, that's not necessarily applicable to college sports, and college football is what is next up on the table. But, and I know we're just giving opinions here, and I know we're this is all fodder, but you can't tell me that basketball fans in our state aren't thinking ahead about college hoops and what the season could look like. And I'm not talking about what Indiana's going to look like or what the Big Ten's going to look like right now, but with this virus and with what we're beginning to see, a plan to reopen America, and who knows what happens with college football, but do you see the college basketball season being played with fans in the stands, or do you think that it will be so new still, this virus, and potentially still around and the recovery from it, that people, whether they're allowed or not, will turn out in mass figures and pack in, say, Assembly Hall on a Sunday afternoon for a blockbuster Big Ten rivalry game?
Yeah, it's so hard to know. I mean, we're all just kind of, you know, basing it on the things that we read, and hopefully we're listening to the right experts. who actually know what they're talking about, because there are actually a lot of people out there offering opinions on this that aren't very well informed. And I would caveat everything that I say by classifying myself right there, you know. But just the things that I've read, the intelligent people that I've heard talk about this, and just kind of gut feeling, I find it very hard to believe that by the fall, you know, and then, you know, by November and by December, that we'll be back at a point where sports with 15,000, you know, people in an arena, or, you know, 100,000 people in a football stadium, that's going to be okay yet. Now, the games may go on somehow, but it, you know, everything you read talks about how, you know, with these viruses, you know, you get the first wave, it can kind of go down, but then a lot of times there's that second wave that comes through that can sometimes be worse. And so I think, you know, there is a lot of thought out there from some of these experts that you really want to try to mitigate that. And so, you know, again, especially the pro leagues, like you said, they'll probably find a way to get the games on just so that you can televise them and get the seasons in. But it just seems like it's going to take a while to be able to do this with fans until the testing is there, until there's a vaccine, until there's better treatment, all that stuff. You know, and the other thing to think about from a college perspective is, you know, these are concerns that obviously the professionals don't have, because dealing with adults who can make their own decisions. You know, colleges do have to make decisions with the best interests of the students in mind. And, you know, how can you compel the athletes to come back and play if the students aren't back on campus, if you haven't figured that part of it out yet? And if you're the NCAA, you know, and you're going to be playing games, you're going to find a way to play the games before school gets back in session, you know, how are you going to continue to kind of hold this veil of amateurism there? You know, and amateurism is already kind of a silly construct that, you know, doesn't really hold up to, a lot of interrogation. But if the NCAA does that, you know, now it seems even less like amateur and more like professional sports. So I think, you know, all of those considerations are really, really make it more difficult to get college sports back going in comparison to the pro league. So, you know, like all of us, I'm just, you know, kind of here as a bystander, ready for any type of sporting event at all to, you know, to watch and enjoy, and hoping they come back, you know, sooner rather than later. But as one who is an especially close follower of college sports, I am, you know, pretty concerned that, you know, these upcoming seasons are going to be affected in some way. And the best case scenario might be, you know, football and basketball being played simultaneously in the spring sometime, because that's one thing I've heard, and that makes a little bit more sense. Just because it's a little bit further out. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see how everything shakes out.
Jared Morris, Assembly Call. We're going to get into some IU basketball here before we close the segment today. I was reading an Indianapolis Star article earlier this week about a long-lost name, at least to me, in IU basketball. And he's not from that long ago. It just, I don't know if it's a story that you wanted to not think about after it happened. I'm not exactly sure. But Emmett Holt. That story in the Star was interesting to rehash that and to remember that. And that he was a part of some dark days at Indiana, not necessarily on the court without success or anything like that, but some off-the-court issues that came up under Coach Crean and his time at Indiana that I'm sure Indiana fans don't remember with a smile on their face, for sure. But Emmett Holt, it was interesting to hear from him, to see what he had to say to the Star, and to kind of get an update on him as well.
Yeah, actually, I haven't had a chance to read that. I did, you know, I saw that there was an article about him that was out there, and haven't had a chance to read it. But you're right. I mean, he had such a difficult time at Indiana, obviously, and went on to Providence and had a pretty good career out there. You know, he was part of that. I believe that was the 2015 team, where basically Indiana had one guy that was taller than 6'7", which was Hunter Mascara Perea, you know, who was, you know, a very, very inconsistent player. And at times in that season, Emmett Holt was a breath of fresh air, because, you know, he kind of came in and, you know, provided a lift, you know, as a big guy down low, even though he was undersized. And you could see that he had a lot of potential, you know, a lot of potential as a rebounder, and really had a chance to be a good player. So I think everybody was, you know, disappointed when he transferred, because it seemed like as an upperclassman, he could really be a contributor. But you're right, you know, those were some, you know, some dark days for Indiana. But I think the best thing is, just for him as an individual, that he was able to come back from that, you know, continue to have a college basketball career, and hopefully he'll be able to play professionally as well.
Talking with Jared Morris of the Assembly Call. Final question for you. I know that we don't know the inner workings of the IU team right now, but we've heard other college coaches speak or have a Zoom video conference or something with the media. I'm assuming there are things going out daily from the coaching staff to the current players about things they can work on at home. And I would imagine that lots of it is physical fitness related, whether it's lifting, whether it's workouts, whether it's cardio work, because this time of year, especially as the summer gets a little closer, you see so many pictures, and perhaps this will still happen when we get into the summer months of June and July or even later. You see lots of pictures of the players in Bloomington doing all kind of crazy cardio workouts with masks on, or they'll be in the sand pit, and often Cliff Marshall puts out videos of those to kind of keep fans in tune with what's going on in these off-season months. But I'm assuming that that's how the team is communicating. Obviously, college coaches, and I've spoken with a couple myself since this pandemic got underway, lots of communication virtually, whether it's on video or group messages or Zoom or whatever it may be. So this is, I'm sure, a different time for Indiana, for the players to be away, for the players not to be in school. But it's approaching a time where school would be out soon and players would have the chance to go home for a little bit. So I'm just curious what you think the IU team is up to now, because it's a situation that Archie Miller and no program, no coach has ever had to face before, on how you communicate and how you do some of the basic things that a program should be doing at this time of year.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, you hope that the guys have access to, you know, to a basketball hoop around, you know, because obviously, you know, a lot of the gyms are closed. Like, I just started getting back into playing ball again at the local YMCA. You know, obviously they had to close down and no one can really go anywhere. So, you know, you see some of these NBA guys that have basketball courts in their house, which I guess would be a nice way, you know, a nice quarantine situation to have a basketball court in your house. But I'm assuming, you know, most of the college players don't have that. So, you know, hopefully they have an outdoor hoop close, or maybe they have a hoop at home still, and, you know, so that they can at least be getting up some shots and kind of staying in that kind of rhythm. And then, like you said, you know, the physical fitness, which is, you know, easier said than done in this situation, as, you know, most of us are kind of fighting out firsthand, but we're also not, you know, trying to get ready for a college basketball season that's upcoming. The one thing I will say is, you know, these are times, obviously, you know, communication is a little bit more difficult. And I think we've all experienced that, you know, when you're communicating virtually with somebody, whether it's over the phone, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's more text messages, if you've had in-person experience with that person, to kind of know their humor, to know their communication style, to know how they intend something just because you know their tone, it can make that communication much better. Whereas, you know, if your initial communication with someone is virtual and you've never really spent time with them in person, that can make communication more difficult because you don't quite know how to take something. And, you know, I continue to think that one of the advantages for Indiana going into next season is the continuity that they'll have. You know, the staff is going to be entering their fourth year. You know, there haven't been, you know, guys transferring out. You know, they've got, you know, just the normal class of recruits coming in, most of whom have been able to spend time on campus and know some of the players they're going to be playing with, know each other. The team has been around each other for a while. So, you know, to whatever advantage there may be, you know, during this time when, you know, all communication has to be virtual, you know, I think Indiana would be in as good a position as any, you know, to at least be able to have effective communication with each other, because they have, you know, they have that continuity, they have that in-person experience. So I'm sure that's a massive stretch trying to look for an advantage, but, you know, there's not a whole lot going on right now. You know, and if all the communication is virtual, you know, you hope that they're able to get the most out of it that they can.
Yeah, no question. Jared Morris, the Assembly Call, he's with us on Fridays, and you can find out more at assemblycall.com with his IU programming that's still going on. Jared, as always, thanks for the chat. Appreciate the time to have you with us today. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
All right, Jared Morris of the Assembly Call, my guest here on this Friday edition of the program. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back in the next segment and talk with Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star. Going to get into some basketball recruiting and some of the younger players and the 2021 kids in the state of Indiana. Also, we have our senior spotlight. We'll do that at the very end of the show Spencer Freiberger of Floyd Central Girls Track and Field. We'll talk with her about, or I should say, we'll feature her with her career at Floyd Central. It's a great one in track and field for the Highlanders. We'll head to a break. We're back with more here on this Friday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach, who got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back in this segment. Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star will join. We'll also have our senior spotlight on a spring sport athlete that unfortunately will not have their senior season because of the pandemic that we are currently in. And today, later in this segment, we'll tell you all about Spencer Freiberger, a girls track and field standout at Floyd Central High School. Kyle Neddenrip is my guest now. And Kyle, there's always basketball to talk about in our great state, but I want to start with something tied to the coronavirus. Subscribers of the Indianapolis Star can read your story with Jason Wagner, the coach at Heron High School, boys basketball coach there in Indianapolis, and he has had a tough bout with the coronavirus. In fact, had the virus really fairly early in March when you think back to the timeline when shutdowns and tournaments were canceled and things like that. He was battling it then. But a very interesting story. Tell us a little bit about that for somebody that maybe wants to get on and follow up and read what you had to write there. Just a really an unbelievable journey that he has been through.
Yeah, so Jason was, and good to talk to you, Matt. Jason was, he fell ill basically right after Heron's sectional experience in early March, which, as we find out more and more, Matt, that I think the virus was definitely going around probably during the sectional week, and we just didn't know it at that time. And it's unfortunate. And there's no right or wrong, or we just didn't know, the timeline of it at that point. So, Jason fell ill the week of, basically that weekend after the sectional was over. They lost early in the week and was having really bad temperatures and high temperatures and just continually getting worse and worse. And finally went into the hospital there at Shelbyville. And, they weren't really ready to handle, what he needed. He was in such poor shape at that point even. And so he was transferred to Indianapolis to a hospital and basically put on a ventilator, pretty soon, pretty quickly thereafter. And, was on a ventilator for 15 days. Talked to, and the story was really made by his girlfriend had kept a journal at first kind of on a calendar, jotting down notes. And then, as it got more serious, started writing down more and more information. So that kind of gave me a good timeline on what happened with Jason and what he was feeling. Because he doesn't remember any, after he went on the ventilator, of course, you're unconscious. And they would only bring him out to check on his, his brain functions and make sure he was doing okay in that regard. But he didn't have any recollection, once he went on the ventilator until he was brought off of it 15 days later. So it was very scary. He was put on an experimental. They tried some different experimental drugs for him. And one of them eventually really started working well. And that kind of brought him back pretty quickly after they started that. And they were able to turn down the ventilator settings. And he was kind of able to come out of it. They felt they got to a point, and I think it was March 31st, when they brought him off the ventilator. And then, they're about for 3 days or so, he felt, there's another part of this that I don't know if people realize I know I didn't even, until I talked to Jason and then found out a little bit more information. But, when you're on that ventilator for so long, when they bring you back, it's kind of a scary thing because your brain has just been resting for so long, and he, you know, for pretty much 3 days there, he felt like he was hallucinating, and some funny stories that he told actually, but are scary at the same time because he just wasn't all the way back, and mentally and certainly physically, he lost 56 pounds and has a long, long way to go. At the point I talked to him, he couldn't hardly even stand up for, you know, more than a minute, and, you know, felt like he needed to take a nap, basically. He was so weak. But there is part of that mentally, too, where you've got to be able to come back from that. And he said, you know, his girlfriend reading over the phone the diary that she kept was super emotional for him, and it kind of brought him back to a reality of what he went through, because he had no idea when he woke up, and, you know, how harrowing it was. And, it'll change his life in more ways than he probably even knows at this point, but for good, and, you know, in a scary way for worse, you know, not knowing, you know, what the long-term ramifications are of having this to the degree he did. So really interesting, and I appreciate him telling his story, you know, trying to tell, you know, some of these stories that are, you know, people coming out of it that I know who can maybe help other people. And, you know, sort of feel like that's part of my job, you know, is to get people to try to tell what happened to them and you know, try to be helpful to, you know, people who maybe could encounter some of these issues down the road, and what are the symptoms. And, you know, the more I talk to people, the more I find out the symptoms aren't always, you know, you don't know for sure, because they're different. People have various levels of symptoms and different things that happen to them. But Jason was a really, you know, serious case. And he was a assistant at Warren Central, and he's a teacher now at Greenfield, but was in his first year as a head coach at Heron, and, you know, 43 years old, and didn't have any underlying issues until he got this virus. So pretty scary stuff, but glad he's feeling better. He should be getting home here pretty shortly, any day now. So that's a good news scenario for him, and you know, for people who read that story. I know I've heard from a lot of people who read it, and I think I'm glad they did, because I think there's things you can learn, and maybe a little bit of a silver lining, the fact that he's come back the way he has.
Kyle Nedenrip, the Indianapolis Star, and if you want to read this story, it's at indystar.com/sports. Again, this is Coach Wagner of Heron High School in Indianapolis that is really just coming out of a battle with the coronavirus. Kyle, I want to jump into some basketball before we let you go. And now that Mr. Basketball in the 2020 class and the All-Star team has been picked, even though they won't, unfortunately, not get the opportunity to play and represent the state of Indiana, now that that's been picked, we can kind of talk more and more about the 2021 class, which is guys that will be seniors next year, and then work our way down into some of the younger classes and future conversations as well. 2021 is headlined by Trey Kaufman. We talk about him basically on a daily basis, and that's only going to ramp up as he gets farther and farther and closer to a decision on where he's going to play college basketball. We all know Caleb First. He was an IU target for a long time. He committed to Purdue. Him and Kaufman are right there, nip and tuck, at the top of the 2021 class. But beyond that, you know, I mentioned Luke Brown, the prolific scorer at Blackford. His Blackford team is going to come down and play at New Albany next year. There are other names, though, that Indiana is recruiting. There are other names that are great players that are set for some really big senior years and going to go on to commit ultimately to play Division I basketball as well at some level. So outside of Kaufman, outside of First, maybe give us your next couple players that you're most intrigued with in this 2021 class as we start to look to next year.
Yeah, it's sort of in recruiting rankings and that sort of thing are a little bit different than what you would talk about necessarily with Mr. Basketball. Not always necessarily, but I think it is maybe a different conversation. And I put Luke Brown's probably not, or definitely not considered probably the college prospect that Kaufman and First are. You know, I think based on, you know, the following he has there at Blackford and you know, the fact that he's already over 2,000 career points, and there are some opportunities. You mentioned New Albany, and then, you know, Blackford will be playing in the Hall of Fame Classic next year at Newcastle, and you know, we've seen in the past that that can be a jumping off point for a Mr. Basketball type of run. So I put Brown in that upper level, kind of right behind Kaufman in first when you're talking about Mr. Basketball candidates for next year. But, you know, there are, like you said, I mean, there, and, you know, Christian Lander, of course, would be in there too, but it seems that he's not going to be part of that mix as he attempts to get on there at Indiana early. So, you know, if you were counting guys for next year, he would be in that mix if we were expecting him to play next year, but I don't think that'll be the case. But yeah, Luke Goody from Homestead is one that you mentioned on that next level. He's I know Illinois and Michigan State really are high on his list right now as he kind of probably gets closer to making a decision. You know, Pierce Thomas from Brownsburg, you know, might not have the overall scoring numbers, but, you know, 6.4 assists a game last year. And really, you know, I thought he was improved his 3-point shooting quite a bit. So I think he's a guy you look out for. Blake Wesley from South Bend Riley is another guy, 26 points a game. Brooks Barnheiser from Lafayette Jeff, I think, is a lot of better player than people probably realize until you see him play in person. You know, Keon Thompson from Merrillville averaged 30 points a game last year, and Merrillville did, you know, they were only 12-12, but they did win the sectional, you know, so that's another guy who, you know, if they can, they'll probably need to put together a better season. And then J.R. Kaniski from South Bend St. Joseph, you know, 6'7", Notre Dame commit. Again, you know, they lost in the 3A sectional. We'll have to make a deeper run to have a chance probably next year, but you know, there's other guys like, you know, Jalen Blackman from Marion, another high-scoring guard who, you know, was playing great until his knee injury. I was actually there at that game when he tore his ACL. So he's another guy, you know, on that mix. And, you know, there's Blake Sisley from Heritage Hills who's a really good player. Shamar Avance and DJ Hughes will both be seniors at Lawrence North. So don't expect Lawrence North to fall off far. And then, you know, Gus Etchison, what he did at Hamilton Heights, you know, even Malik Stanley from Warren Central kind of didn't come out of nowhere, but had a sensational junior year for Warren and went toe-to-toe with Lawrence North in that sectional final. So there's lots of guys, Cooper Jacoby from down there at Silver Creek, Jake Heidbreder from Floyd Central, Perry Meridian has Jaden Taylor who's going to Butler, Connor Hickman from Bloomington South. There's that class is just really, really deep. Not to say all those guys will be in the mix for Mr. Basketball, but definitely for Indiana All-Star contention as we go into next year. And man, I wish we could see all these guys play right now. they're missing out and we're missing out on seeing them. And gosh, I mean, especially with this class, it'd be a lot of fun to see them play right now.
For sure. Kyle Neddenrip, the Indianapolis Star, he's with us Fridays. Kyle, stay safe. Stay healthy, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot, Matt. Take care.
Absolutely. We want to wrap our show up, as we have been doing each day now, with our senior spotlight for a spring sport athlete here in Clark and Floyd counties that unfortunately just not going to have a senior year or some of those great memories. And it's not just sports. It's affecting proms and graduations and so many things. It's just hard to believe. Each day we want to do a small part in recognizing some of those great athletes from our area that have put so much time and effort. That's the thing I'm not sure that people always understand that haven't been through it, how much time to be a good athlete, to be a good teammate it takes to work year-round, basically, in a lot of these sports. And today we recognize a great girls track and field star from Floyd Central High School, Spencer Freiberger, a tremendous career as a Highlander. She has a long, long list of accomplishments in track and field. Hoosier Hills Conference high jump champion in 2017 and 2019, sectional champions with Floyd Central 2017, 2018, 2019, high jump state qualifier in 2017, regional champions in 2018, indoor high jump. She's got the school record at Floyd Central, indoor state qualifier in 2017 and 2018, and she's going to run in college or participate in track and field at the college level as well. Hobbies for Spencer Freiberger: playing the piano, hiking, hunting, playing soccer and spending time with her family. And she wrote, when we ask about shout-outs, people she wanted to recognize that have helped her through the years, she wants to give a shout-out to all of her coaches who have helped develop her through the years as an athlete. She also wants to thank her parents for always pushing her past her comfort zone, and her grandparents especially for making it to every sporting event, even no matter the circumstances. Spencer Freiberger is the daughter of Mary Lou Freiberger, her mother, Logan Whitaker, her stepfather, Patrick Gold, her father, and Amanda Brown Gold, her stepmother, and she's going to attend the University of Louisville after her high school career coming up here very soon, and she will major in biology. She also will be a part of the track and field program at Louisville as well, so she will continue on in her athletic career. Spencer Freiberger, a terrific career, a long, long list of accomplishments. And like we tell each athlete each day, we are so sorry that you won't get the opportunity in your final go-around to compete for your high school, but take some solace in knowing that you have put Floyd Central on the map in track and field in so many ways and have had just a tremendous career that you and your family should be very, very proud of. And so today we wanted to take a couple minutes to recognize another great senior standout here in the area, Spencer Freiberger of Floyd Central Girls Track and Field. That's going to wrap things up for this Friday program. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, stay home, stay safe. We'll be back on Monday at 11 o'clock for another week of the Hoosier Report, complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. Don't forget, you can find us as a podcast on Apple Podcast and SoundCloud as well. Have a terrific weekend. Back with you Monday. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.